Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand? LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got fun. Here on the podcast with Cal Poly head softball coach Jenny Condon in her 11th season this year already. Coach Condon has 265 wins in her 10 seasons so far. She's the three-time Big West Coach of the Year, and her teams have won Big West championships in 2007 and 2009. Coach, how's it going today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, really. We have the season coming up here starting Friday, I think, in Arizona, and so that'll be the first game there. The beginning of the softball season starts with tournaments, or not really tournaments, but like right. Classics. People, like eight teams descend on one place and play all. Everybody plays everybody over 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days, right?
Right, yeah, we start with tournaments. So with softball, we can play 56 games in a season. Okay. Well, we only have 14 weeks to do it. So we'll, you know, this weekend we go to Arizona State and they host a tournament. I think there's probably 25 teams. And we'll wow. play, and it's round robin, and you get paired up against kind of whoever you get paired up against. And so we'll play 5 games. And then works
in 3 days.
In 3 days, right. Yeah. So we usually will play 2 games on Friday, 2 Saturday, 1 Sunday. Sunday's getaway day,
right?
But sometimes it just depends.
You get there late, and so you play one on the first day, that kind of thing.
Too, yep, right? Yep, definitely.
And those usually happen in warm weather places because the season's got to start in February, and so you guys get a chance to host your own tournament as well, right? Later on in March, is that?
Yeah, we host one in March, but we're on the
tournament.
Road.
Sorry, do you call it a tournament? What do you
tournament.
Call it?
Yep, okay, okay. It's a tournament. Okay. Yeah, so we're on the road for the first 4 weeks, which is actually kind of unusual because everybody thinks California's warm, and it is warm here, but we want to go to not traditionally rainy weather, so we go a little bit further south.
Got it. And you get to play all kinds of teams at these tournaments. You play teams from the SEC. You get some real experience when you go to these places. Can you talk about some of the teams that are on your schedule early on in the season and what that means for you as a young team?
I think it's great. I think we have a really strong schedule this year. We open up this weekend. We've got 3 Pac-12 teams. And then next weekend, we've got Pac-12 and we've got SEC. So, you know, we get to play Florida this year. They're on our pre-conference schedule, and they won it last year. And we play Alabama, and we play, you know, all the Pac-12 teams, probably six
of
them.
Yeah.
And so what that does for us, it increases our RPI. And we need to play those teams and kind of see where we are and how we stack up against them, because they're the ones in the tournament at the end, so we need to be able to compete with them.
Right. Is it pretty common for Big West teams to play, I mean, in these tournaments against other teams like that? Is that, I mean, I would imagine, like you said, everybody just kind of gets thrown in and jumbled in at these tournaments, so I would imagine a lot of people play a lot of people, which is maybe a departure. I know I talked to Larry a lot about the RPI, Coach Lee over at the baseball team, and he's, you know, he has a hard time building his RPI up because he doesn't get the opportunity to play those teams all the time. It's kind of a nice thing for a softball program to be able to measure themselves up against other teams like that.
Yeah, definitely. There's some really strong tournaments on the West Coast, and then there's some really strong tournaments in the Southeast as well. Right. And so we'll go to Arizona State, we'll go to Palm Springs, and that's it's the Mary Nutter Classic in right. 3 weeks. And that's 35 teams, the top teams in the nation. And everybody kind of comes in there, and we know that, you know, we get to kind of battle it out with everybody, and some of the games are televised, and it's a great recruiting tool, but it's also just a good standard for us to find out where we're at.
Right. And probably with so many freshmen you guys have, and we'll talk about it in a second, maybe you don't even know where you're at quite yet. I mean, in terms of figuring all that out. I want to ask you some questions because I'm from San Luis Obispo area. I'm from Cayucas originally. And so I'm always curious because I moved away and came back, but I'm always curious in terms of what people who aren't from here kind of know about or think about San Luis Obispo, you know, before they get here. So prior to coming to Cal Poly, you were at UNLV, Northwestern. What did you think about Cal Poly, or did you know about Cal Poly? Maybe you played them from time to time, but what did you know about San Luis Obispo, and how did you get, like, how did you look here as a place to be and work and live?
I had no idea where San Luis Obispo was, what San Luis Obispo was. When I was at Oregon State, I got a call that the job was open and, you know, are you interested? I'm like, where is that? And so then I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. And I flew in. I was like, wow. My first impression was, wow, this place is beautiful. It's on the water. I grew up in Minnesota.
Right.
So everybody thinks every town in California is on the water. It's not. So, just the location, it's beautiful. It's, according to Oprah, the happiest place on earth.
Right.
So I think San Luis Obispo's kind of made its mark nationwide just as a beautiful place.
Like the last 5 years, maybe 10 years,
So I'm just blessed that I was able to get the opportunity to come here. And why would you ever leave?
Yeah. Do you think it's more of a destination now than when you got here, just in terms of being a place people know about and so forth?
I think so, yeah. And if you talk to the alumni, everybody wants to stay, but there aren't the jobs. And so they've got to go away. And, Sarah Claren, who's our volunteer assistant, she went to school here. She played here. Her husband went to school here.
Yeah.
And now she just said today, she goes, we're so blessed that we never had to leave because we were both able to make it work.
Yeah. They're a fun family for sure.
Yeah.
Was there anything that was surprising? Maybe you got here, you were here for a little while and you go, oh, that's something that's about this area that I didn't really expect. Or that's something about this school or this community that I didn't really expect. Was there anything like that?
Oh yeah, the farmer's market. It's
okay.
Awesome.
Okay.
So that was great. But the thing I like about it is, I grew up in the Midwest. I was in Corvallis for 6 years. And San Luis Obispo is a lot like Corvallis. You get to live in California without all that congestion and traffic, and
right.
it's our secret little place.
Right.
But it's close enough to go to the city in San Francisco. You can go to LA. You can get anywhere, but you don't have to live in it.
Right. And like you said, you're from the Midwest, Edina, which is near Minneapolis
right.
and St. Paul. And so I would imagine you grew up a Twins fan. Is that safe to say?
Oh, of course. I love the Twins. Kirby Puckett was my favorite player.
So you were like in your, I'm picturing you graduated from college in like 90. So you're in like your early 20s in like the heyday of the Twins. And I'm trying to imagine what that was like. I mean, I can picture how good they were in the Metrodome at that time. What was that like being in college and kind of, your early 20s when the Twins were really, really good?
Oh, my God. It was awesome. I just thought they were going to be like that all the time. But it was super fun in the Metrodome, the Hefty Bag Stadium. And it was just such a great atmosphere. And it really was a baseball town for what we knew. I mean, we have the Twins and we've got the Vikings, and that was kind of it. And so, we had Kirby Puckett and Dan Gladden and Kent Herbeck and Tom Bernanski and, Frank Viola. So I love the Twins, and I followed them a lot. And
Herbeck?
It was Kent Herbeck, number 14, first baseman. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually been to Target Field a couple times. Have you had a chance to get up there?
I haven't been there yet.
Okay.
Every time I go home, the games are sold out.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went up for work and checked it out. So I'd imagine that probably had some kind of influence on you in terms of being a fan of baseball or softball. I mean,
We used to go to the Metropolitan Stadium when the games were like $3 and you could sit in the outfield, and every once in a while you could go during a school day.
Is that pre-Metrodome?
Oh yeah.
Right. Okay.
Oh yeah, it was outdoors.
Was it on the same place that the Metrodome, they built it, or where was the Metropolitan Stadium? Oh, Metropolitan Stadium was where the mall is now, right?
Right, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So
it.
That's where it was.
Yeah, we're getting deep into Minnesota stuff, so let's get back to softball.
Okay.
One of the things that I really like about watching softball, and I had a younger sister who played softball, one thing that's really interesting to me is the pace of the game. You can kind of sit back and lay back and watch a baseball game, and you're a little farther away from the action, and it's just kind of a little bit more mellow of a pace. Softball seems like every little thing is like magnified. You can bobble a ball as a third baseman in baseball, and if you bobble a ball as a third baseman in softball, the bases are so short, you're not going to get anybody out. Talk about the pace of the game and kind of from a spectator standpoint, maybe somebody who's unindoctrinated, has not been indoctrinated into watching softball. How does that differ a little bit?
Yeah, the pace definitely is much quicker than baseball. There's no leading off. There's no throwing back to first.
Right.
We can play a seven-inning game. So we play seven innings instead of nine.
Right.
And we can play a seven-inning game sometimes in an hour and a half.
Right.
And depending on how quickly the pitcher works, which is in softball usually pretty fast. I mean, we've played a game in an hour and 5 minutes before.
Wow.
Seven innings.
Wow.
So, but the bases are 60 feet versus 90, and the pitching mound is 43 feet versus 65.
Right.
So, you know, everything just moves that much more quickly.
Yeah, yeah. You know, in terms of just being closer to the action too, is one of the things I really enjoy is being able to sit in the stands here, and you're really close to. I mean, you can't even see the on deck batter's, you know, lower half because they're so close to where the stadium is, and the stadium's a little bit raised. I really enjoy that kind of closeness to the game and the players. I'd imagine you guys have some regular fans who you kind of get to know on some level too, in terms of the program and the and just everything that goes on because of that proximity, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's really kind of an intimate environment, and if you wanted to, you can sit in that first row and you can hear, you know, the coaches' conversations or what all the players are saying or what the, you know, sometimes what the umpire is saying to the catcher. You know, so we've got, you know, Bob and Tim that sit over on first base side, and we've got the super fans and our parents and their family members come to all the games, and so it's really fun, and you definitely get used to seeing everybody, and you'll, you know, take a look and, hey, you weren't at the last game. Where were you? So it is. It's a nice, close-knit community.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about the season a little bit. As last season went on, you guys had kind of came together. Big West Conference play went really pretty well, especially towards the end. I think it was 5 of the last 6 games you won, something like that. Missed out on the conference title by a game, I think. Can you tell me a little bit about last year and with a freshman pitcher who pitched like Sierra did and kind of in the middle of your lineup as well, kind of solidifying things. But then you had a number of experienced players. I think you lost 4 all Big West players who are seniors or who aren't there anymore. Can you just tell me a little bit about last season, kind of just take us through maybe chronologically and in terms of how your team progressed and what happened towards the end of the season as well?
Yeah.
For people who don't know, like, just kind of give me like a background on the last season.
So we had 7 seniors, and they had kind of, we'd been getting better and better every year, but, you know, we were just missing that one thing.
The big class.
Big class, yeah. And then Sierra came in as a freshman, and we expected her to do well, but I don't think anybody expected her to do as well as she did. And, you know, the game of softball and the game of baseball is so contagious. And when you're doing well, everybody's doing well. And when you're in the tank, everybody's in the tank and you're trying to fight your way out. And so for softball versus baseball, you can have one pitcher and you can ride them till they can't throw anymore. In baseball, you know, they've got the Friday guy and the Saturday guy and the Sunday guy. And then you got the Tuesday guy. And, you know, they use 10 pitchers. You know, Sierra could throw 3 games in a weekend on a Big West Conference weekend. And so because she had been doing so well and our defense played great behind her and we came up with some clutch hitting and our, you know, our senior leadership did such a good job kind of helping her along and, you know, protecting her when she needed that and having her back when she needed that. And, you know, they helped her grow and mature as a pitcher. But then offensively, she tore it up as well.
Yeah, she was your best hitter average-wise, and I want to talk about her in a second. But you guys have 7 or 8 incoming freshmen this year, like half your team, over half your team. I mean, it's kind of unprecedented. I imagine you're one of the younger teams in the country with only 1 senior and a lot of sophomores, maybe not that many juniors even this year, 2 juniors and 1 senior. I mean, you're talking about a very young team. Can you take me through the 3 – I think it listed 3 all Big West players returning between Emily and Sierra and
Courtney.
So tell me about them and how important they're going to be this year.
They're going to be very important, especially offensively. Emily has gotten better and better every year. She'll be our leadoff batter. I mean, she'll start as
she's a left-handed hitter.
Lefty hitter.
Okay.
She hits for power. She hits for average. She's got speed. She can drop a bunt. So she's got all the tools.
So now one of the things in softball is like left-handed slap hitters that I always see.
Right.
Is that something that like some players do sometimes or some players are just that? Or how does that whole like thing shake out when it comes to left-handed hitters?
At our level, usually they can bunt, they can slap, and they can swing away by the time they get to our level. But there are some kids that are just slap hitters and they really kind of – all they try to do is put the ball on the ground in the infield and beat it out. Because they traditionally have a lot of speed.
They're so fast.
Yeah.
And they're already in the left-handed batter's box.
Right. So Emily can slap, but she's a hitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and she's a pure hitter. Okay. And so Emily will be there. And then Courtney and Sierra will probably be our 3-4 hitters. You know, it's fun to watch them because the game is slow for them.
And already?
Yeah. You know, they're savvy, just like the rest of a lot of the freshmen. They have a good softball IQ, which means they know the game. You know, we can ask, why didn't you throw the ball there? And 9 out of 10 kids are going to say, I don't know. And Courtney would be like, well, because I saw she wasn't going, so I wanted to keep her out of scoring position. You know, so she's got that, you know, secondary runner already in her sights. So she's smart about the game. She knows the game and the situations, and she never tries to do too much.
It's a unique challenge to have this many freshmen, but what kind of a unique challenge is it for Emily to be the only senior on a team? I know the soccer team last year, I think, had one senior in Steve Palacios. But, you know, when you talk about somebody who's just like the only senior on a whole team of softball players, what kind of unique challenges does that are Emily up against?
I think if she tried to be the sole leader, she would have a hard time with that. You know, probably one of the biggest challenges in the beginning is all her best friends graduated. So now she's the only senior. And it's not like there's juniors. They're freshmen and sophomores, so they're a little bit younger. But I think she's done a great job with kind of, you know, setting the tone. This is what's expected. But she's had some help, too, with the juniors and the sophomores also. So we didn't put too much pressure on her to do it all herself. But she's just doing a great job with us.
Yeah. Somebody told me the other day, they're explaining it to me, I think, more than anything else. But they're making an argument that in any sport, the one player, you know, there's certain positions like a quarterback in football, but the one player that can maybe mean the most in terms of wins and losses just singularly by themselves is a pitcher in softball, and especially if that pitcher can also hit. And like you, we've talked about already, and we've alluded to it, Sierra Highland in 2014 went 26-8. She had a 1.94 ERA, maybe 1.51 in conference, I think, was what the Big West put out. She was the pitcher of the year. She was the freshman pitcher of the year. Oh, yeah, and then she hit 366. She led your team in average home runs, RBIs. How good is she?
She's really good. She's really fun to watch. You know, she's our fastest kid. She's our strongest kid.
She's your fastest, too?
Yeah. I mean, she is lightning fast. Well, actually, Stephanie Hayward probably would give her a run for her money, but she's fast.
Stephanie's a freshman. Second baseman.
She was playing second.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
But she's an infielder. She's
infielder.
A pitcher.
Okay.
So she'll pitch. So, and she'll probably hit behind Sierra.
Okay.
So, but you know, Sierra is so gifted as an athlete, and she's really athletic would be what I would describe her as, and as a freshman. That's all she got by on. She was so athletic. She's got the quickest hands. She's so strong. She's got great reactions. This year, it's been really fun to watch her mature. You know, last year she was a thrower. This year, she's a pitcher. Okay. She gets the difference between throwing the ball on the black and putting it one ball off the plate. Yeah. You know, her expectations of herself have gone up. She's situationally hits better. She thinks the game more. And so to add that on top of her athleticism is really exciting.
To have a player like that who, you know, pitches but then has to be in the middle of the order as well, I would imagine over, you know, 3 games in 2 days, that can become kind of draining on some level. Is it the pitching that kind of gets you said physically she could pitch maybe all the games, mm-hmm. but is it like the mental drain that maybe is the reason why you would even put another pitcher out there on some level? Or is there also, I mean, I guess there's physical fatigue too, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm speaking from completely like ignorant perspective on this one, just, you know, for the record.
You know, their fitness and their leg strength is really the most important thing for a pitcher, but it's the mental part as well. The great thing about Sierra is she is so trusting and she is so humble. She has no ego, which is kind of rare when you get someone that's as good as she is. So she trusts the pitch calling. And so she doesn't like think about it and second guess it and question it. You want a rise ball in? I'll throw you the rise ball in. So she tries to take that part out of it. And so, but it is, you know, get it off the plate, one more pitch. Oh, I missed that call. I have this. It is mentally draining and physically draining, but, you know, that's what the off season's for preparing. And then now moving into tournament time, she'll throw three games in a weekend out of five.
Okay.
If she has to, she'll throw more. But the beautiful thing is we've got three pitchers, and they complement each other well. And so we don't plan on throwing Sierra 265 innings again. If we can cut down the number of innings that she throws, she'll be fresher throughout the season. You know, and Lindsay and Steph will get innings, and we want to use them too.
And Lindsay and Steph are freshmen?
Pitchers. Okay. Yep. Okay. So Lindsay Chalmers.
I want to ask a quick question about Sierra really quick too. I feel like maybe I just forgot it because that's how that goes. But I was going to ask you about tell me about the freshman, and I'll
sorry.
Come back to it. No, you're good.
You'll think about
you're good.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll pop into your head at 3 a.m.
Yeah, exactly.
So Lindsay is a freshman, and she and Steph will both definitely get some pitching time for us. Lindsay's got some off speed. She's got some. She throws the ball down, but she's got a curve, screw, rise. They've got all of those pitches.
Uh-huh.
Sierra definitely throws the hardest.
Were you a pitcher in college? You weren't a pitcher, right?
No, I was an outfielder.
So is it weird to teach pitching when you weren't in terms of softball, or is there pretty straightforward stuff in terms of the pitching part of it?
Well, you're only as good as your assistant coaches. Okay. I would never claim to teach pitching.
Okay.
I know enough to know we're not going to get better if I'm a pitching coach.
Okay.
So Chelsea Barclay.
So that's what your assistant.
Yeah. Okay. She's our pitching coach, and she works with them. And, you know, they're so different. And so Sierra's kind of a power pitcher, and she throws 70-plus miles an hour, which is...
That's fast.
It's really fast. Yeah. It's like high 90s in baseball. So she's got that. And then she's got a knuckleball. Off speed, and that's tough to hit too.
Not a lot of softball pitchers throw knuckleballs, right?
No, and it's no joke. It's like a Tim Wakefield. So, you know, you got 70 mile an hour screwball in on your hands, and then you got to change up outside, you know.
Right.
So she's tough to hit.
Yeah.
And then Lindsay's not as quick, but she throws the ball down. She's got a good off speed pitch. And then Steph is kind of a mix of both of them.
Okay.
So the three of them will complement each other.
Nice. And last year you went with mostly just two pitchers, right? I mean, you went with Sierra and Chloe. Yeah. And that was limited that way on some levels. What do players do in the off season? I know the baseball players go and play in wood bat leagues, and there's like places for them to go get games and essentially have additional practice and additional reps. What do your players do to get reps in the off season?
Some of them will play. Like, there are some 23 and under leagues.
Okay.
Or they can play women's, so it's ASA, so they play a few tournaments in the, over the course of the summer, maybe five or six.
Mostly like in the LA or Bay Area or something like that.
Yeah, okay. They don't travel too much. Right. But some of them, because it's just so many games in such a short period of time, sometimes they just need a break.
Yeah.
Like Sierra, we shut her down for the summer. You know, to just rest her body and recoup and, so we can have her fresh for this season.
Okay. So sometimes it's just shutdown mode at that point. Because, like you said, it's a short, intense period of time where all the games have to happen, and 50-something games in how many weeks? 14?
In 14 weeks.
Dang.
Yeah,
that's no joke for sure. When you recruit seven freshmen this year?
We've got seven.
Seven, okay. That's what I thought I counted. Somebody told me eight, but I was pretty sure it was seven. What's the message when you tell, you know you're going to lose a ton of players off your team this year from last year. What's the message in terms of playing time? How does that make it easier in some ways to get to say, hey, you're going to have opportunities to really seriously play here right away?
Yes, we do say that. You know, when you and recruits look at that, they look at their roster, and actually you should. And if you aren't, you're not doing your homework. So these freshmen came in, and I don't care if you're a transfer or a freshman or a senior, everybody's going to get a shot. And so, but knowing we were graduating so many, these freshmen came in really hungry and knowing that they were going to have an opportunity to be a starter. And we'll have some freshmen out there. You know, probably Chelsea Convasar will play shortstop, maybe second base.
A freshman at shortstop?
Yeah.
Wow.
Heck yeah. Well, Kim Westland played shortstop as a freshman.
Fair enough.
So, we'll have a freshman behind the plate. Okay. You know, Suzanne Morris. It could be Taylor Izaguirre, who's a sophomore, or we could have AG
Did I see Sierra catching when she wasn't pitching last year?
No.
No. What does she do? She DH when she doesn't pitch?
She does DH, but she will probably, when she's not pitching, she'll play first, she'll play third, or she'll play short.
Okay.
Like, she really, she really could play anywhere.
Okay.
But she's a great third baseman, actually.
Okay. All right. So tell me more. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
so
that's all right.
Yeah.
So they knew. They knew they'd have an opportunity to come in and have a shot to start. And so you got to get it done defensively. And then, you know, who's going to hit? Because we need hitting.
Right. And that's probably a big question in terms of probably like lineup and everything else. Yeah. Because when you're making a lineup with maybe, you know, even numbers of freshmen, sophomores, juniors, seniors, mm-hmm. you only have to kind of slot maybe two or three new players into the lineup somewhere. And you can kind of think about, okay, these other players I know something about in terms of where they hit and how they hit. I mean, you know how people hit in high school, but that doesn't necessarily, or in club or whatever, but that doesn't always transition to how they're going to hit here as well. I would expect probably a lot of different looks, different lineups, both defensively and offensively early in the year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're going to give them a shot to see who's going to get it done and who's maybe, you know, not going to get it done. Hopefully they all do. You know, ideally, they all play so well that they force us to really make hard decisions to do the lineup. But we train them all fall. We work with them all fall. And based on those tendencies, you know, coachability, can they make the adjustments? Are they just purely athletic and can get it done? Great. You know, we try not to overcoach them so that when the game starts, they get to just go and play. But we will have many different lineups. We have 5 games this weekend. We may have 5 different lineups.
Sure, sure.
And so we'll see who shakes it out offensively and defensively.
Yeah. Do they go against Sierra in practice? And is that how useful is that?
It's great, you know. And a lot of times, especially with the freshmen, you know, I'm nervous. I'm so, you know, we're playing all these big teams. I'm like, you face one of the best pitchers every day in practice. You can hit her, right? Yeah.
Okay.
There's no difference, right. You know, and everybody's feeling the same way. So, yeah, you saw the end. You didn't see the end. All our pitchers threw live to our hitters today, and we tried to do that a couple times.
I just saw the pitching machine.
Yeah, yeah, pitchers had already thrown all their bullpens, we wanted to give the hitters some swings.
Totally, totally. Going around the Big West, I know Long Beach and Fullerton are the two teams ahead of you guys picked in the preseason poll. What does the Big West look like? What are the challenges there? Obviously, Long Beach and Fullerton are kind of in your sights, but can you talk about the Big West kind of top to bottom? Who are some of the better teams and the challenges those teams, you know, give you guys?
Yeah, I think traditionally the Big West has been, like last year, I think it was pretty even. You know, we had great pitching. Long Beach traditionally has had really good pitching. And Long Beach and Fullerton, they have, you know, 1, 2, 3 in the conference. That's kind of where they finished. And they've got, you know, Fullerton's the only team in the conference that has a national championship. So they've got under their belt, so they've got a little of the tradition there. Mm-hmm. Hawaii had a down year last year, and that was the second year in the Big West for them.
Right.
But they're going to hit the ball a ton, and they usually have good pitching. I think this year, of any year, the Big West is as strong as it's been. So it's a crapshoot. Yeah. You know, you go 1-8, Riverside's picked 8. They can finish second or third. I mean, they could finish first. I'm not saying that they can't.
Right.
So I think that there's a lot of parity, and I think it's anybody's to win. So the team that competes the hardest and is the most successful.
You talk about little things in baseball or softball, and it seems like, I mean, especially in a 1-0 or 3-2 game, which that's what most softball games are when it comes down to Big West play, maybe. I mean, I don't see a lot of games that are 6 or 8 runs, maybe 1 out of 3 in the weekend has maybe 6 or 8 runs total,
right.
You know, when you're talking about teams. Little things, you know, like you said, coming out and being more focused mentally or something like that, it seems like it would make a huge difference when you get towards the end of the season, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't remember, but I think maybe 4 or 5 of our losses in conference were 1 run.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris said like 6 of them were 2 runs or less or something like that.
Yeah. So
I could be making that up, but it's something like that.
You know, and that's the little things. That's, we didn't get the bunt down. We didn't advance the runner. We, you know, had a wild pitch or a pass ball, and that's the difference in the game. And so you know, like I said, the team that competes the hardest till the very end is going to be the team that wins.
The key to this season for Cal Poly, if you know, in like a minute. I know it's a tough question, but what are, like, if you're a fan sitting in the stands and you see Cal Poly playing and they're doing blank, then they're probably going to be having a pretty good year.
Well, pitching and defense wins championships. You know, look at the Super Bowl. Defense wins championships. So, you know, we've got to get it done in the circle. It's all about pitching. Our game, more than any other game, is all about pitching. People like to say it's turned into a hitter's game. It has, to a certain extent.
What's caused that?
Just
better hitters?
Technology.
Bat technology?
Bat technology, the ball, the field. Because of the technology of the bats, the dimensions of the outfield are silly.
You know, really?
This is a pitcher's ballpark because the wind blows in from left field. Oh. So when you look at our numbers, our power numbers, they're traditionally lower than anybody else in our conference because the wind blows in here.
Yeah, it blows out to left at the baseball field and in from left on the softball field,
so
right?
So it's a pitcher's ballpark.
Okay.
But you look across the country, and if you're in a, you know, regulation is 190, 220.
Not all softball ballparks are the same, though, in terms
correct.
Of...
Right. Yeah, the minimum is
190. Okay, 220.
And 190 down the line is 220 okay. in the center. So ours is 205, 220. So ours is a little bit bigger.
Right.
I think that, you know, move the fences back to 225 all the way around, which is, you know, some people are, that's been talked about, changes the game. Put the fences at 6 foot. Right now, it's mandatory only 4 foot fence.
Okay.
So if your ballpark is set up to hit home runs, it's kind of hard to defend that.
Interesting.
So,
and in baseball, they've changed things, like with BB Core and things like
right.
that.
Yep.
Mostly because of safety,
right.
And you don't have that same issue, maybe in terms. Or is that happening? And is that something that people are talking about in terms of bat technology and ball technology and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And so we, the Big West doesn't do it. I wish they did. I wish we would have that as a rule, but traditionally everybody else in the country is doing bat testing, and so that's the exit velocity off the bat, the ball off the bat, so it can't be over 98 miles per hour.
So is that with every team's bat, or is that like
every bat
that you're going to use, and do they do that before the game?
Well, we don't.
How do you do that?
Our conference.
Well, but how would they do that? Like
there are bat testing machines. So there's a standard bat.
So you would take all your bats before the season starts, or every game?
Some conferences have before every game. Some have it before the weekend series. Some have it at the beginning of the term. So we'll go to ASU, and Thursday night when we get in, we go to the field, and we have all our bats tested. And they'll put a sticker on them if they pass, and those are the only bats that we can use.
And if they don't pass, they don't pass.
They take them.
They don't give them back to you.
No. They'll send them off to Washington State where they'll test them more because, I mean, it's – look at how close the game is. You couldn't pay me enough to play third base or first base or pitch.
Well, and theoretically, everybody's buying the bats from the same places, but there's things like that, like bat shaving or whatever that can happen too, or even not even on purpose. Maybe bats get just broken in just right, and now its exit velocity is higher. Is that?
Absolutely. So the more you swing it, the more swings that you have on a bat, the more, you know, it's kind of like a trampoline.
Right.
It gets looser and looser with time, so it's gonna come off the bat quicker. And so when you're not testing and that bat has 1,000, 2,000 swings in it, it's gonna be hot.
And that's a cost thing, right? I mean, to not test the bats. I mean, you have to have a machine in every stadium.
So, and they're $500. I don't know. I think it's worth it.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like that much to me.
But that's a whole I think we should test.
Okay.
Just like everything, is it cost effective? It is if you've got a third baseman that, you know, takes one in the knee or off the forehead.
Right, and that happens from time to time, I'm sure.
It does. Yeah. I've seen it. I've seen a pitcher take one. So, that's a whole other discussion.
Interesting. No, this is probably this is my favorite part of the podcast, and it wasn't even a question I planned to ask. So that's awesome. Not awesome in terms of people getting hurt, but it's good to get a...
it's important.
Yeah, it's important. It's good to get a
we need
perspective.
We need to keep the kids safe, bottom line.
Yeah, interesting.
So we're trying to change the ball and soften the core because everybody uses bat. Easton, Worth, Louisville Slugger, DeMarini. So as bats get swung, they're going to get more and more, you know.
But if the ball is soft, I mean, I play slow pitch softball.
Softballs get soft.
softballs get and you can get them at different level core, right? So there's numbers along with them in slow pitch anyway.
We're at a 0.47, but you know, years past we were at a 0.5, so it was a lot harder and a lot more lively. Okay. As the technology for bats have gotten better, we've softened it.
You might be in favor of going to like something even lower than that. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, absolutely. And they're testing that. So they've got some test balls out there, and because we've got to figure out how to keep the kids safe.
I would imagine they do that at those, some of these tournaments, probably. Like they say, okay, we're going to test a, I don't even know the numbers, 0.43 at the one in Palm Springs or something one year or something like
that. We usually do all the testing for things in the fall.
Oh, okay.
So fall tournaments, because we play in the fall. So we'll play scrimmages. And.
So your fall is like a football team spring or like a soccer team spring where you can play other teams and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so we can play up to 8 competitions. We can't miss class, and we, you know, play on the weekends, but so we can get 8 games in. So we usually tend to scrimmage the junior colleges, get our freshmen their feet wet, and you know, see what we've got.
Yeah, that's great. What's something people don't know about Jenny Connan?
There's a lot of things they don't know. I come from a giant family.
How big?
I have eight siblings, including myself, and 4 step siblings.
Wow.
So there's 12 of us.
Wow. And where do you fit in the order in the
ranking?
Number 11 out of 12.
Second to last. Yep.
Oh my gosh. And so like, it's no wonder, I mean, you kind of had to scrap probably with older siblings all the time, I would imagine. And
Yeah. And we would get together with our cousins. We played everything. We would make a game out of anything, you know, who could get to the fridge fast enough, who could tie their shoes fast enough, who could pick up the house fast enough. My mom liked that one.
How does that affect how you coach?
I don't know. I just expect people to have the same kind of intensity and passion as I do. I just, you know, it's fun. It's great. It's so fun to be out here and to be able to do this. You know, so I would hope that everyone would feel the same way, but they don't. So for us, it's, you know, that's the fun part of coaching, is trying to tap into what really kind of gets them going.
Yeah. I know you guys are way over here, and we're pretty much almost out of time here, but I talked with other coaches at Cal Poly, and I see coaches at each other's games, and it seems like there's at least some kind of a, like, you know, I don't want to say camaraderie, but maybe that's it. Maybe just, you know, there's coaches that go to each other's games and do each other, you know, that. But you guys are way over here, so that kind of makes it a little bit harder. I know the basketball coach, Joe Calero, has like 16 brothers and sisters, too. Is that something that you've ever talked with him about?
Yeah, he's got a huge family. Yeah, does he have that many?
15, 14, right. Something. Yeah, something big.
You know, there's something to be said about being from a big family and coaching. It's just kind of maybe part of your makeup.
Okay, there you go.
You either got bossed or you were the boss.
Or if you're in the middle, maybe you try to do both at the same time.
Yeah,
I love it. Okay, great. So the Cal Poly softball season starts Friday night in Tempe. You guys play Creighton.
Friday morning. 9 a.m. 8 a.m. here.
It's nighttime somewhere, maybe. 8. Right. Wow, 8 a.m. So you guys play like two games on Friday to Saturday?
We play at 9, so it's actually, anyway. We play.
It's either Friday. 9 or 8 here, one or the other, depending on what time of year it is.
I don't know. I'm just going to be on time. Yeah. We play at 9 and 11:30.
Okay.
So we open up with Creighton, and then we play Oregon. Then we play 2 on Saturday and 1 on Sunday.
Now, is the field like there's a couple fields going on at the same time?
Yeah. So the first day we're at the ASU Stadium, and so there's only one game going on there. And then the Tempe Sports Complex has 4 fields.
Okay.
And so there's 5 fields playing all weekend, starting on Thursday all the way through Sunday.
Yeah, it's beautiful out there. Yeah. I went there for spring training. I'm trying to get out there this year, too. And then your first home game is the 5th of March against IUPUI.
Correct.
Yeah, and that'll be a doubleheader.
Tournament. Yep.
Yeah. And are those the only two games that first day? Is just
first
you guys
day.
And them?
Yep.
And then you have, what, 5 teams coming in or something like that?
Yeah, so, and then the tournament starts. Well, the tournament technically starts Thursday. We'll open it up with IUPUI. And then we've got
A lot of other teams. I mean, yeah.
I don't know. We play Creighton Friday. That's what I know.
Yeah.
I don't know who we play
in
March.
Awesome. Well, if you want to come out and check it out, it's a faster game, a lot faster than baseball. It's, you know, one of the reasons I like soccer so much is because it's an hour and a half. You're in, you're out. And I think I came to one softball game out of maybe the 3 of them that I was at last year was longer than an hour and a half, I think. One of the Bakersfield games, I think, lasted a little bit long. I know. Yeah. Chris told me that wasn't the one to come see, but that's how that goes sometimes. Mm-hmm. So you'll have your tournament the 5th, and then I think a couple weeks after that is when conference starts. And I would imagine there's at least one or two instances where you guys will be here again. The baseball team's over on the other side, and you pay to get in, and you get into essentially both games, right?
Yeah, it's so fun. I love it when we play the same time baseball plays. It's the crowd's great, and we get, you know, baseball people coming over to watch, and then you've got the softball going to baseball, and, you know, I think we have a good connection with baseball, and so it's always a fun atmosphere.
Jenny Condon, I really appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in trouble town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out on the streets direct me running back.